right, we are back with part two of my conversation with Jessica Totillo-Coster covering the State of the Product Industry Survey. If you want to read the full results, the report that I put out, you can head to prooftoproduct.com/2025survey. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/2025survey. It's pretty detailed, so give yourself some time to read through it. I will also include a link to part one of our discussion in the show notes. So during this episode, part two of my interview with Jessica, we cover how product-based businesses are making money in their businesses, including the percentages of those that are selling wholesale versus retail versus licensing. We talk about how many revenue streams product business owners have, their gross revenue versus net revenue, what people are actually paying themselves, and the importance of paying yourself. Friends, if you are not, you should. We have a podcast that helps you do that. So we also discuss Jessica and I's thoughts on burnout in the industry, just generally as a whole, but also how to handle balancing real life struggles while running a business. Again, I really appreciate Jessica taking the time to sit down with me to talk through this. She was a huge help as I was crunching the data and kind of assessing the numbers. And also when we were setting up the report, having other people who are leaders in this industry who are like, okay, what do they really need to know? What do these brands need to know to push their businesses forward? And she was a helpful ear for that. So Jessica, thank you for that. But I do think this survey and the data will help all of us grow stronger businesses together. So again, if you want the full results, go to prooftoproduct.com/2025survey. Today's episode is brought to you by our Is Wholesale Right For You private podcast. This free audio series will help you decide whether wholesale is a good next step for your specific business. And if you're reading this report, you know that wholesale, selling wholesale, is one of the top revenue streams for the more seasoned businesses that participated. And so we want to help you do that. After listening to this audio series, it's less than an hour. Two things will certainly be true. You'll know whether you want to pursue wholesale for your business, and you will have the action steps to get started. So sign up for that at prooftoproduct.com/private pod. If you have been wholesale curious at all, this is the greatest place to start. So prooftoproduct.com/private pod.
I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Are you down to talk about the financial overview section?
Yeah, let's do it. This is the thing that weighs on us.
I know. I know. It was very interesting. So we asked folks, how do you make your money? And so they checked all that applied. Like they went through the list and checked everything. And then I kind of was able to dig into some of the numbers. And selling wholesale was at about 87%-ish, which was up from 79 last year. 99% of respondents say they're selling some aspect of retail, whether it's online, in person, whatever it might be. But 25% utilize six or more revenue streams. And I was pleased to see that this was down significantly from 2024. Mm-hmm. So it went from 87% last year, where people were just completely overloading themselves with multiple streams, down to 25%. Now, our pool of people got smaller this year, too.
Right.
So that may, and it skews more experience. So that could be part of it. But like, what were your thoughts when you saw that?
So at first, I had a similar thought process as you. Yes, it went down, but also there are fewer new people. So I think sometimes in the beginning, you're like, let me just get everywhere and see what sticks and works.
Yeah, see what sticks.
Mm-hmm. But I was happy to see that the higher revenue streams, the higher the number you have, did skew toward those later businesses. So It seems as if people were reining it in, which is good, right? Doing fewer things better.
Yeah.
What I was still kind of like, and I don't know if I have the answer, if we can figure out the answer or what it is, but I'm still, when we see the revenue numbers and like what they're paying themselves. Like, why are so many people still not making a lot of money?
I'm curious about it too. And when we were putting the survey together before we asked anyone to submit anything, I kept telling my team, I'm like, I want to add expenses. I want to know where they're spending their money because I want the numbers. Like, one of my favorite things to do for my mastermind clients, my advisory board mastermind, is look at their P&Ls because I can spot right away, like, oh, okay, here's part of the problem. You know, we're overspending here, or hey, I would like you to spend more here, or test it. I mean, that's one of my superpowers, in my opinion, but I know not everybody likes to look at their P&Ls and can figure that stuff out. But just seeing on the survey, the income stuff without seeing the expense stuff kind of killed me a little bit. Yeah. But also, I didn't want to overload people and I didn't want to get too nitty gritty on them, which so we did ask for annual gross revenue, so total revenue, and we did ask for annual net profit. So just assuming what the chunk of expenses were, but over half reported less than $25,000 in net profit.
Yeah. So when you look at some of these revenue streams, okay, so you've got wholesale online, retail online, in-person markets, and then there is this huge drop off down to custom work, wholesale, in-house direct sales, brick and mortar, wholesale trade shows, right? And I think the actual revenue of those kind of followed a similar pattern, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then licensing too. And I don't really know anything about that world in terms of like licensing your art and things like that, but I'm just wondering, why are we doing them at all? And is it taking attention away from other things?
That was what my curiosity was with those bottom ones too. Everything from licensing down on this chart. So it's for those listening, it's licensing, classes, in-person or online, semi-custom or name drop, which I've had a lot of people interested in my community recently, people doing coaching and consulting, drop shipping, and then referrals, which was affiliating for other brands or other companies and or having ambassadors, affiliates, influencers promoting your products and services. I thought the same kind of, because I do have a lot of people in my community. And also I should say here, I know you shared with your community and others in my peer group shared with their product folks, but this also could just have something to do with it's our proof to product survey. And there is a chunk of people that are wanting to do more licensing within our community. So the data points do skew based on who's completing this, of course, and who's marketing and telling people to fill it out. But I agree with you. I was looking at this going like almost all of the top ones, I guess custom work's the only exception. All of them are some portion of either wholesale or direct to consumer. And I did parse it out by different methods just because there are some people doing all of them and there's some people doing just one or two of them. And I thought it would be helpful to see the detail. But I agree with you. It makes me think, are we spreading ourselves too thin still? Are there things that we should be pulling back on? Now, obviously, diversification is important if something were to just collapse. But at the same time, I think that also really lends itself to the stage of business someone is in. And we talked about this a little bit last year when we did this podcast of the younger brands who are doing too much kind of sink themselves a little bit because what you waters grows. And if you're trying to water everything, you're not really kind of doing any of it, right? Whereas the more experienced brands, they can build more methodically. They might get D2C rolling pretty well, and then they layer in wholesale, and then they layer in something else. But they tend to have a stronger infrastructure to make that happen, too. They have more team and cash flow and all that.
Yeah. And actually looking at, too, you know, you did kind of break down over the years in business. So the people 1 to 2 years, they are most commonly retail online. And then they a little bit of wholesale. But also when you get up to this 15 plus year or the 10 to 14 years, that is when you kind of see them start to branch out. But what I also thought was interesting is we have the messy middle. I think it came out to like the 3 to 10 year, which we can talk a little bit about. But I also saw in the later, maybe it was the 10 to 14 and the 15 plus, that they were starting to see they were slowly declining in sales. And so I'm wondering, is their expansion in sales channel a reaction or the cause?
Oh, interesting.
Right. So did they start thinking, oh, sales are declining, so let me try licensing. Let me try and do these workshops. Let me try and do this. Let me try and do that. And they sort of were thinking, I need to diversify? Or were they like, this all feels good and it's running. Mm-hmm. Let me go do these other things.
Let me build the next step.
And that's what caused it. So we don't really have insight into that.
That's a curious question, though.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's both. Probably. I would imagine some of it is strategic building. And I would say some of it is maybe panic building.
Right.
Oh, crap. Things aren't working. And let me try something else.
Yeah. And look, there's always a time and a place to try something new. And you and I have talked about this. And I think we talked about it actually on last year's survey specific episode. But I would be curious isn't the right word. For those of you listening, if you fall into this segment of people that we're talking about, where you've been in business a long time, you started trying some new things, if it's not working, it is okay to let it go no matter how much time, energy, and effort you invested into it.
Yes. Do not let the opportunity cost. So opportunity cost, for those listening, if you're not familiar, it's like that we hold on to something just because we've always done it, or we've already sunken in time, energy, and effort. So we hold on to it because we're like, we can't give this up. I've spent 3 years trying to build this. And yes, yeah, it's making some money, but it's not enough money. And so we keep doing it, even though it doesn't serve us. And so yes to what you're saying about like, it's okay to let go of something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, just to give a little personal example here, I closed my mastermind for a while in the middle of COVID. It was a profitable, people loved it. People were so sad that I was closing it. And I told folks, I'm like, for personal reasons, I need to take a pause on this. And I remember telling some of my peers, I'm going to pause this for a while. And they were like, what are you doing? Like, it's, you know, a yeah, profitable revenue channel. I'm like, no, it's not working for me right now. Like, yes, it's working for the business, but it wasn't working for me personally. And so I know that's a little bit of a tangent, but the yeah, same is true if it's not working in your business. If you're putting a ton of time and energy and effort into something and you're not seeing the financial rewards that you need to see to keep it going, it's okay to say, you know what, we're changing gears. It's okay yeah, to change your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And I usually, the parallel example, I'm like, because I know we've all done this, except for maybe people who are like married to their high school sweethearts, but we've all stayed in that relationship for way too long because we feel like, oh, I've already put so much into it.
Yeah.
And once you get out of it, you have this brand new focus and your life becomes so much better. And the same is true here, right? Like when yes, you give yourself permission to let go of this thing that isn't working and isn't supporting itself, that gives you the capacity to focus on other things. And that's, you know, you have to give things a fair shot.
For sure.
I don't know how long people have been doing the thing. This is just
yeah,
an interesting observation.
Yeah, it for sure was. I think too, in that one chart, and you all see it when you look at the report, but there's a clear drop off. It goes from like strong revenue drivers to not strong. Mm-hmm. So taking it back to that, what were your thoughts when you saw how much people are paying themselves? And do we need to recap for the listeners what these are?
Yeah, we should probably recap it.
Okay. So 28% of participants are not paying themselves from the business. 37% are paying themselves under $25,000 a year. 30,000 are paying themselves between $25,000 and $100,000 a year. And 5% of all respondents are taking home $100,000 a year or more specifically from the business.
So my initial response when I saw the numbers is I want everyone to be paying themselves more.
Yeah.
Full stop, right? Like, this is why we're doing this. Then I'm like, okay, I don't know these people's situation. I don't see the individual responses and how it all lines up, right? It could be yep, those people, like we talked about earlier, they're like, this is fun money for me and it doesn't matter. Or I'm just doing this as a hobby because I love it. I don't have insight into that.
We don't know. Yeah.
So if that's you, then whatever you take home or don't take home, cool. But back to if your goal is to grow a product-based business for the long term, like we need to figure out how to get you to pay yourself more. And I do in the beginning, and I think you talked about this a little bit in the recap.
I did.
Right? Is in the beginning, you're reinvesting everything. So you overlapped like 4 years, right? With like a side.
I did with my corporate job and the two businesses. Yeah.
So I did it for 18 months. So I left my job in September. So September, October, November, and December, those 4 months, I did not pay myself from the business. I didn't need to, right? I had vacation that got paid out. I had socked away money before I quit my job, all of that. So I didn't pay myself either. I started paying myself right away after that. And so I don't know if it's, is the money not there? Are they afraid to take it out of the business? Are they reinvesting?
It's hard to know the details.
Yeah.
I said the same in the recap for this survey. I mentioned that one of the notable items from this report was that most founders are underpaying themselves. And I mentioned that this is tough because I get it. I did not pay myself for even a couple of years because I was reinvesting those profits back into the brand. And as you mentioned, I also had a corporate job to lean on. I had two kids at home and two side businesses. It was a lot going on at the time. But my point is, that was my circumstances and I was able to do that, which was nice. But not everybody has like a side job or, you know, a corporate thing to lean on. Also, I mentioned in the report that like the economy is really unpredictable right now.
Yeah.
And we can talk about some of the fears and things that we saw from folks. But I did mention in the survey, and I'm going to, and there was the summary that I really want you all to be taking something from this business financially, even if this is a side gig for you, even if this is a side hustle, I want you to be paying yourself something. And there's different ways that you can do it, dear listener. You can pay yourself a small percentage of your monthly sales, if that's easiest. You can pay yourself a flat monthly stipend. I've had clients who were not paying themselves after years and years. And I said, give yourself $100 this month. Just give yourself, transfer it over and set it to auto pay. So $100 a month is, you know, they weren't putting themselves on payroll quite yet. And get in the habit, build that habit of taking a draw or paying yourself at least once a month, even if it's a small amount. And then we work our way up, right? You start paying yourself more as you have it. And I do have a podcast that talks about this too. It's how you can start paying yourself. And I linked it in the survey for anyone that's looking for more information on this. But I do think there are people that start businesses purely as hobbies, and that's fine if that's what they're doing. Oh. But majority of the folks that took the survey are here trying to create long-term, sustainable, profitable businesses. And part of building that infrastructure is finding a way, making sure that you are being paid as the owner, even if it is a very small amount. Also, I want to share this real quick, and I don't mean to monopolize this portion of the convo, but one thing I would recommend to anyone listening that's kind of grappling with this is identifying what your personal salary goals are. So the way I work with this on my coaching client side of things is I say, okay, how much do you need on a monthly basis to live a good life? We take that number. And then we look at what does the business need on a monthly basis to manage all the overhead and sustain and keep a cash cushion going too. And then we take those two numbers and we add them together. And that's the revenue goal that we're working towards, because we know if the business expenses and our personal expenses can be covered by that revenue goal, then we're set. We're not setting our revenue goals around some arbitrary number just because we think it's cool to make a certain amount of money. We're setting it based on what our true needs are. And so anyhow, I'll cut this off here. But my point is just for those listening, if this is something you struggle with, that's a simple way to get started and kind of reassess what your goals should be on the financial side.
Yeah. And the one last thing I want to say about this too is even if you're early in your business and you don't have a ton of profit right now because you are reinvesting. Maybe you started ads, right? Maybe you're investing in new product, whatever it is. Even just giving yourself $25 so you can go out and have a nice lunch and grab a coffee, you need to celebrate every tiny little win you have so that you don't get burnt out.
Yes, 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 yes.
I am so guilty of this. So like, don't think I have this all figured out. Okay.
Same girl, same.
But we get burnt out because we go too hard for not enough reward. And so we need to reward ourselves, even if it's just a little bit. Take out $5, you know, to like go get a coffee and go like sit outside of your favorite coffee shop and people watch or something, like any little bit.
Yeah.
But you do really need to build those habits. And then the only other thing, which we didn't really talk about, is make sure your products are priced right. Because the number one thing I see, the number one reason why people can't pay themselves is because their products are priced too low.
Yeah. 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 For sure. There were two things I kind of still wanted to touch on that I know you've been interested in. You've been talking about, we've been having private conversations about the tariff situation and the burnout feelings that people are having right now. So there was a noticeable theme in the survey responses. And there specifically were like a lot of open-ended. There was one question that was open-ended that talked kind of about one about challenges people are facing, and then one that was kind of about the tariffs. And when you combined those open-ended answers together, there were a lot of themes about fears, fears about tariffs, fears about supply chain issues, fears about political instability in the United States and how that was going to have a ripple effect through the global economy. And then there was also this layer of just like, life is hard and I'm doing too much. And it was interesting to, well, one, friends, I feel you. I feel you. All of it's really hard. It struck me because there was this really nice mix of like hope and resilience. We're going to do this, like the grit of entrepreneurship, right? Even though people were in the same breath talking about how fatigued they were, how things felt so uncertain. And I guess it's just worth noting too, that like these external stresses, so things that we can't control, like the economy or political fears, they are truly weighing very heavily on our community members. And it's making a negative impact in their day-to-day decision-making. Yeah. I assume you're seeing this too in your community?
100%. 100%. And it's hard. And, you know, you and I talk about this obviously all the time. And as a leader in the space and someone who I just like, I want to save everyone and I'm a
solve every problem.
Right. I'm a problem solver. And that's unrealistic. I cannot do that. I'm not Superwoman. I have no magic powers.
Exactly.
What I have is experience. And so I try so hard to remember, I opened a brick and mortar boutique at the beginning of 2009 when everyone was broke and the housing market was in shambles and people on Wall Street were losing their jobs. And I still did $650,000 in revenue in my first year. There are so many businesses that start, thrive during so-called bad economic times, right? And so it's very hard to acknowledge these very real fears that I too have.
Yes.
While staying positive and focusing on controlling the things we can control. And some days I think I do a better job of it than others.
Same girl.
And the only thing I can say is we are all uncertain and we are all in this together.
Yeah. I echo everything you say. I find that as a leader, it's very tough right now to not only lead within my own business, but then it's also difficult to lead the people that rely on me for strategy.
Yeah.
Because as you said, I'm totally a problem solver. Like I thrive on it. I love it. But as you also said, we don't have the answers because all of this is changing so quickly. And I really love what you said about control the controllables or control the things that we have the ability to control. And keep an eye. I keep telling everybody, keep an eye on the other things so that we're aware, we're informed, but also so that we can make decisions as needed, but also don't let it drag us down. Don't let us take it to the point of paralysis, right? There's that, right? There's these economic things. I also wanted to acknowledge here that some business owners, based on the survey and based on the comments and things, they seem torn between balancing their own personal drive and ambition for what they're trying to accomplish with the business, the impact they want to make, the revenue they want to hit, all of these things, and the steps they need to take to grow the business to that point, right? To hit those goals. They're struggling with the balance of that along with just real life hurdles, like living life. And that tied to a lot of personal things. There was a lot of notes about caregiving and life feels complicated right now on a personal level. And also things are complicated on a professional level. So I also think this is slightly different, but there's this push-pull of, but I'm ambitious and I want to do this and I'm going to make this happen. But also there's a pushback because just life feels hard right now for folks. And I don't know, I just wanted to kind of empathize with those listening. If that's you, like you're not alone in that. There are a lot of people that commented on that in the survey.
Yeah. I mean, there are days when I just want to completely crash out and say F it all and it's all just too much. And, you know, sometimes I come and I crash out in our Voxer thread. And then the next day I'm like, all right, how are we going to help all the people?
Right. I'm back.
You know, I had to get that out of my system. You know, this is not what people want to hear. And this is something that I talked about. I don't remember exactly when it was. I talked about it on my podcast and just like one-on-one with people, that this chaos and uncertainty is likely to continue. So I empathize with how you are feeling. I am feeling the same, right? There are certain people who are being more impacted or more directly impacted than others, right? Like when I initially posted the update in April, early April, about the tariff situation, you have people in the comments who are just like, this is going to totally screw me over and shut me down. Then you have the people that are like, oh, wait, does that mean that my vessels are going to triple in price? Oh, wait, this, right? And so some people are like just kind of figuring it out. Ultimately, that's why I just try and go back to the control, the things you can control, because you will force yourself into a spiral.
Yeah.
And that is not going to help. Now, that doesn't mean I don't spend days spiraling. Believe me, I do. But when I get like the level head back on, I'm like, okay, this is the normal for right now. With the current administration, they're doing everything they told us they were going to do. This was all expected. Nothing is a shock.
Yeah, but it still is a shock.
I know.
I mean, I know, but it is.
But I'm like,
yeah,
we were told, especially now we're coming up on the end of the first 100 days. We absolutely knew the first 100 days would be like this. With the tariff thing, it's still up in the air at the time of this recording. By the time this goes live, who knows?
Tomorrow it's going to be different.
Right. The one thing I will say is that with the response from the bond market and a whole bunch of other financial things that you guys may or may not be paying attention to, which is fine. You really don't have to. Don't drive yourself crazy. But that may rein it in a little bit, and hopefully it won't be as bad as it seems at the moment. But I think right now we need to maintain, go back to Katie's strategy. What do you need to live a decent life? What do you need to run your business? What is your enough number?
Yep.
And focus on that. Are you going to grow in 2025? Maybe not. And that's okay.
That's okay.
Right.
I was just telling my coaching clients, I said, look, if you end up this year at the same numbers you had last year, that's a win. Mm-hmm. That's a win. And I know it doesn't feel like a win because we're always on this hunt for growth, right?
Yeah.
But also it's not a decline and you're still in business and people are still buying your product. And that is all a win. You mentioned about the tariffs, and we did ask about the tariffs in this report. I mentioned earlier in this conversation that we may have been a little too early, or like the timing may have not been the best, but I do think that the responses we collected were pretty split. It said 49% said yes, they were affected or impacted by the tariffs, and 51% said no, they were not. What I mentioned in the report is that, you know, again, we saw these responses in the midst of things changing so incredibly rapidly. I mean, it was literally today it's this, tomorrow it's this, you know, it was a lot. But to go back to what you said, there were people that knew immediately this is going to impact me because they manufactured overseas. They knew like, okay, or they had cargo shipments that were on their way. They knew that this was something they were going to have to deal with immediately. And I think the 51% that said no may not have known. I think they're still going to be impacted is my take on this. And I would be curious to ask this question again in 6 months. So maybe I'll do like an Instagram poll or something. But I think once the ripple effect of these tariffs kick in, when we see the people that manufacture domestically, but the price of their goods have gone up, or I think there's going to be a rise in costs and supplies and shipments of things, and that will impact everyone in our space.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Again, I think we were a little bit on the early side for this question to get a fully fleshed out answer, but it's developing, I guess, is the right answer for it.
Yeah, it is developing. You know, I think too, like you were saying, that 51%, it probably hasn't hit them yet. Everyone will be affected, right? Like there is nothing that really can 100% be made here. Because either we don't have the machinery, we don't have the material, we don't have the skill, whatever it is, you know, and whether or not that's good or not, that's a different discussion. Here's where we're at right now. And so, like you said, the ripple effect just hasn't been felt quite yet for everyone. And so ultimately, prices are going to go up. And because we function, like because our financial system and our economy is capitalism, all prices are going to go up, even if they don't have to in general, right? Because that is what capitalists do. And we saw that kind of like the first time around. I think they put tariffs on washers, but they also raised the prices of the dryers. Because if people are going to pay X number of dollars for a washer, they'll pay more for a dryer too. So like that's just going to happen. And I think what we'll end up seeing is people are going to buy less.
Yeah, I agree.
So right now it is, can you maintain, even if you see a dip, that doesn't mean anything, right? I have talked to a couple of product-based business owners who maybe they had this big, huge business with all of these employees. And for whatever reason, they ended up kind of cutting down on that. And in the end, they were more profitable and able to put more money in their pocket. So I think it's important that we don't chase revenue carrots, arbitrary revenue carrots. And I do expect there to be a shift in Americans are consumers, right? We've been conditioned to be consumers. And I've worked in this, like, I literally don't know how to do anything else, Katie.
Okay. You've got skills. You have skills and other things.
I've literally been selling physical products like since I'm 16 years old. And that's the gray streak is real. So this is all I know how to do. Will there be shifts? Possibly. And so our job is to just continue to get out there, find the people who want what we sell, keep showing up, and just be realistic about what having a successful business means. And it's not, we don't all have to win capitalism. You know, like we can all just have a business that we love, that funds our lifestyle. You and I talk about this a lot. I feel like I'm rambling, but
you're not. It was funny because what you're saying right now completely resonates, because you know it's part of my like core values is I don't want us hustling for some arbitrary number. And I felt a little bit torn as I was putting this report together because I was trying to state the facts of like, here's the facts, like businesses that were making over $100,000 were seeing growth in this, this. Like I was trying to just collect and regurgitate the facts. But then I'm also like, but friends, if you don't want $100,000, like in my head, I'm like, if you don't want $100,000 business, it's okay. You don't have to work towards that.
Right.
Just know what your enough number is. I love that you said that. I did a podcast episode with Kelly Higdon a long time ago, and it was like, know you're enough. And people got so confused because they thought it was like a self-help. Know that you are enough as a person. I'm like, no, no, this is like a know what number is enough for you to tackle. But all that to say is, I think collecting this type of data is really important that we did in the survey, just so we can get a sense of what's happening in the industry and what the trends are, right? It helps us see the challenges. It helps us see the opportunities. It helps us recognize where other people are. I do worry that people lean on it for comparison, which is not healthy at times, but I mean, it's kind of natural to do that. But to be clear to anyone listening, these data points are just that. It's data. You need to build a business that really is going to fuel your life, that is going to give you all the time to spend with family or friends or travel or do the things that you want to do. So don't be chasing any arbitrary numbers, as Jessica said. Really know what that number is that you need. And then also just remember, like the other thing that really came through in the survey, and we saw it last year too, is good things take time. There's no way to speed up the clock to gather more experience. There's no way, like a magic button, to hit that six-figure revenue marker. Take your time. Build the business you want to build in the way that you want to build it. You're not chasing anyone else. You're not racing anyone else. You're just doing your own thing. So continue to do that. But on that same topic, I want to stress that profit is the number that matters most. The report has information about what people are doing in terms of profit margins and net income and how much they're paying themselves and all of that. But if I could give you one piece of homework as you're listening to this, it would be to focus on your profit. And as you said, the cost of things is going to go up. So please keep an eye on that and raise your prices when necessary. I know a lot of people are hesitant to raise their prices, but also you're probably going to have to do it at some point. Get those up if you need to stay in alignment with your industry. And then keep a careful watch on expenses too. I'm not saying to like cut back drastically, because you do need people and systems and support to continue building this business. That was something else that came through quite clearly here of those going it alone. It was taking them a lot longer to get the traction they wanted. And so it's a delicate balance. It's a delicate dance of where do we spend? Where do we not? But ultimately that profit number is what matters most, because that's the money you're going to use to pay yourself. That's the money you're going to use to reinvest in the business and do that next cool product you want to do. So anyhow, now I'm babbling, but I guess what would you want to kind of word of advice or suggestion would you want to leave folks with here?
Yeah, I think really I would just reiterate that the only person putting pressure on you is you.
Yes.
And your business does not need to look like anybody else's. And there are seasons in business, and that is normal and that is okay. I come from corporate retail, and the goal every year is growth and growth and more growth and more growth. And why are we not grow? And that is unnecessary.
Yeah.
I think that when you go into it with that sort of mindset, and then we hit a snag like we're hitting right now, it can really make you spiral, doubt yourself, worry about the future of your business. I mean, like you mentioned, there's so much hope in these numbers and these responses, right? And people are still feeling good and they're scrappy. And they're going to move forward. But these are also people who have been in business longer. They've probably already been through something similar. Like, I've got one of the women in my community. She's been in business 30 years. She's like, this is just another blip. We'll survive this like we've survived all the other ones. But for the newer people, this is just like, it's taken them out. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to remind you that there is no shame in just coasting, just doing the same you did last year, even doing less, as long as you are still making enough money to support yourself. It's okay if you make less money. It's okay if you have to go get a part-time job. All of that, it's all okay.
It's all okay. I mentioned that too in the summary. I don't mean to cut you off here, but everyone's personal circumstances are so different. Mm-hmm. And so again, it's a good reminder to like do what's best for you always. That's what I'm always going to tell you, to do what's best for you, even if it's not what, like, even if I'm telling you to do something else, tell me to, no. But also too, there was a big chunk of folks, I think it was only 25% of the participants are relying solely on their business as their primary source of income.
Yeah.
The others are utilizing other sources of income. And so again, to your point, to just echo what you've said, there's no shame in taking an outside job or finding other income sources or choosing to be okay on a smaller amount of money, like whatever it is that we're doing, like just know what you want out of something and focus on your specific goals without worrying about everybody else.
Yeah. And at this point in time, things are just going to be messy. And I have said this to Katie and I've said this to other biz friends. I'm like, I wish I worked in any other industry other than this one right now.
Cold hard truth from you.
Yeah. I wish I did something different, because this is going to be, it's confusing, the whiplash with the back and forth, like we've talked about, like it's too much, but this is where we're at. And we are CEOs and business owners. And right now we just got to like keep our eye on the prize, just keep moving forward. And whatever you got to do to get through, that's what you do.
Yeah. And like you, I started my first product brand in 08, went to my first trade show in 09 when things were wild. What was I thinking? I had no business being there.
I know. Same.
We made it through COVID. Our clients made it through COVID. So I know we've talked a lot about the negative things that are happening, but I do hope that it's been encouraging for our listeners because there are a lot of opportunities right now.
Yeah.
And it's up to you to continue showing up, remind people that you have products ready to go and that, you know, how they can buy, tell them how they can buy. Do not stop marketing and selling. I know it might feel weird right now. I know that you are like, I don't want to bother people. This feels weird. Send the email, post the social posts, like do what you need to do to keep the visibility up. It's going to be super critical. And I saw this in COVID and I shared it all with you guys during COVID, but the brands that kind of paused their marketing in COVID, that kind of put their head in the sand, they had a much more difficult time ramping things back up when things kind of felt normal. It was the brands that kind of kept going imperfectly, you know, and telling people like, I don't know what we're doing either. We're figuring this out as we went. And they were the ones that really thrived through this. You know, they kept the relationships with their customers going. So I guess too, another thing I want to leave you all with as you listen to this, and I know we're going long here, we'll probably have to split it into two. Just keep showing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your amazing self and show your products off and don't stop telling people how to buy. Like that's going to be the most critical thing.
Yeah. Do not pull back on your marketing. Just keep going. And there are going to be people who are like, oh, she's trying to sell me her product. Those aren't your people. Don't worry about them. Show up for the people who are paying attention and who still want to support you and all of that. Don't worry about the naysayers, right? Just keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Love it. Jessica.
Katie.
Thank you for coming and doing this today. Thank you for dealing with me as I was putting this whole thing together and was like excited about, I'd message you about excited stats that I saw. And then I'd call you like, I'm exhausted. I can't go any further. And here we are. Now it's done. So just thanks for being that mode of support for me during this. And also just thank you too for lending your own insights and what you're seeing from your community members and your clients. I think it's really important that we have these open conversations and I'm glad we have the data to support some of this now. But for everybody listening, share your links. And then if we're going to put this on your episode, I'll share mine too, I guess.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Katie, for including me in the process. It's been so much fun. Thank you, listeners, for actually listening to me ramble on for this very long episode. Mm-hmm. I am at e-commerce badassery. That is my website. I have some social profiles, but guess what? I'm not active on those.
No, she's not. I've tagged her in it. And it like never goes anywhere. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I have an automation that's like, thanks for mentioning me.
Which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. But the best way to just kind of be in my world is to listen to the e-commerce badassery podcast. So I would love to have you there.
Absolutely. And for your listeners, they can find me at proof2product.com. I am on social, but not as consistent as I probably should be. And I'm at proof2product there. And I think I am going to be doing some more deep dives into specific segments. I really want to look at each of the revenue levels in more depth. I just didn't have the capacity to do it right now for this report. I mean, I printed this thing out and it was already 52 pages.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we might do that in my labs community though. That's where we talk about growing and scaling your product-based business. Slightly different stuff than Jessica does in her lounge program, but complimentary as well. So that's at proof2product.com/labs for anyone that's looking to join. Jessica, thank you. I appreciate you.
Yes. Thank you, Katie. Have a good rest of your week.
You too.
All right, friends, thanks so much for tuning in today for part two of this episode, this conversation, the candid conversation with Jessica Totilo-Coster of e-commerce badassery. This state of the product industry survey is truly a labor of love. It takes a lot of pieces to coordinate. Every year, we want to make it better. We've only done it 2 years, but we're always trying to make the questions clearer, more concise, and really providing data that is going to push businesses forward, that's going to give you information that you can use to make better decisions. That's my goal with this. So we will be discussing the survey results inside of our labs program on an upcoming coaching call. And that's going to be an opportunity for folks to ask clarifying questions, or all of us are going to be discussing next steps. So we're going to dive further into those opportunities that we talked about on last week's episode. If you want to join us in labs, if you're not currently a member of our community, you can do so at proof2product.com/labs. That's proof2product.com/labs. Also, if you found today's episode helpful, I'd just appreciate if you could share it. Also, if you're open to leaving a review and a 5-star rating, we would appreciate that too. You can leave that rating and review at ratethispodcast.com/PTP. All right. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week with a new episode.